Welcome to the Healthy Skin Show with Jennifer Fugo, where we're flipping everything you've been told about your chronic skin issues upside down and connecting you with alternative solutions your dermatologist never told you about.
Welcome back to episode number 338 of the Healthy Skin Show. In today's episode, we're going to dive into, well, we're going to go back to one topic that I do love to hold space for here on the show because I had it, and that is hidradenitis suppurativa, also known as HS. And I know most people, when they hear this, they're like, what is that? It sounds kind of like, in my head, I always kind of imagined this like medieval dragon rising out of a lake, but that is not what it is. It is a really traumatic skin condition. And in time, this condition, not only coupled with debilitating symptoms and at times extreme levels of pain, can seriously and permanently damage your skin tissue. My intention for this conversation today is not only to update you on some of the really cool new concepts that we understand about HS, but also to discuss better ways to manage pain, both from the conventional and the integrative side, because sometimes, let's be honest, we need to do both in order to have a decent quality of life. And I think sometimes that concept, what your quality of life looks like, gets lost in the conversation. My guest today, Dr. Stephen Dave Louie, who's returning to the show, understands that having options can be really important in the process of managing HS. If you missed the other episode with Dr. Dave Louie, he's an associate professor and program director at Wayne State University in Detroit, Michigan, where he focuses on teledermatology, non-invasive skin imaging, skin of color, integrative dermatology, and complex medical dermatology, including hidradenitis suppurativa. He serves on the board of the Hidradenitis Suppurativa Foundation and the editorial board for the Journal of the American Academy of Dermatology. So without further ado, let's dive into today's conversation. I'm so glad to have you back, Dr. Dave Louie. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back, Jennifer. Great to be here.
I know we always have great conversations about hidradenitis suppurativa, which sounds like a mouthful for somebody who's never heard of it. So, by the way, if you don't know what it is, we might refer to it as HS because it's just simpler. So now at least you're in the know. One reason I wanted to talk to you today is because I feel like from my own experience, now granted, I didn't have a very severe, more advanced case of HS, but I did have, for those of you who don't know, I did have HS in my armpits back in like 2010. And one of the biggest frustrations for me was how painful when I would have a flare up, like how much pain and discomfort I would be in. It made it difficult to move and whatnot. So I thought that would be a good place to start. Like, what is going on in HS that it triggers so much pain for people?
Great question. And I'm glad we're talking about pain because you're right. Pain is the number one symptom in HS. It's can be horribly severe. And the pain, interestingly, they've done some studies on quality of life and different issues. The pain level that patients experience is a better predictor of their quality of life impact than the severity of the disease, which to your point speaks to that you can have mild disease and it can still be very painful. And that's hard because sometimes, you know, if someone knows about your disease, even a loved one, and they look and they're like, well, it doesn't look that bad, but you're telling them, well, you can't feel what it's like on the inside. That can be really stressful and invalidating in a lot of ways when people are going, oh, you look fine. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And we're, oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say too, I would imagine the more advanced the condition becomes for some individuals. And so there's this, it develops like a tunneling effect under the skin. Does that also cause pain even beyond or outside of a flare?
Definitely. So then one of the studies, they found just over 60% of people said that their pain in the last week was at least a 5. And only 9% of people who responded to the survey said they had no pain in the last week. And you're right. It's there's flare-ups of really bad pain, and then there's kind of this baseline pain. And what's really one of the sad things with it is that sometimes people just get so used to living with that pain that then when we do get the disease under control with effective treatments, all of a sudden they realize they've been living with this constant pain and it's gone. And they had just sort of adapted to it, you know, like, oh, every day it's a 3 out of 10. But when it flares up, it goes up to like an 8, 9, 10 out of 10. So they just are living with this sort of constant gnawing and aching pain.
And also too, I will share that living in constant pain is exhausting. It's debilitating. It makes you not want to do pretty much anything or show up in life to anything. So I could imagine that if I had a pretty advanced, and then there are, you know, individuals whom are on social media sharing their experience living with very advanced forms of HS, that must be extremely exhausting. I mean, aside from all the other things you have to go through, which is what we are obviously going to talk about today, some of the reasons that are causing some of this pain and the reaction within the body. With this being said, and I don't think we touched on this the last time, and I think this is an important conversation to be had because as you and I know, HS is starting to be more discussed. And part of it is because now we're having more treatments available, and we'll talk about some of those things later on. But I like to understand, is there a sort of immune response going on under the surface? I love to dig into that. With HS, like, do we have research to understand some of the immune components or cytokine components that could possibly drive some of this condition?
I'm very happy to report that we do. Having said that, we're still learning a lot and we're still figuring it out. And HS is so complicated because, like you said, there's sort of early disease and what are the inflammatory cytokines? What's the immune system doing? Then there's later disease. So we're really learning and studying, but we have learned some things. And like you mentioned, that's led us to have some treatments, because if we know what parts of the immune system are out of balance, then sometimes you can target those with a treatment. So one that we know is TNF, or tumor necrosis factor alpha, and we have medications that can block it. So the first medication approved for HS, adalimumab, blocks TNF-alpha, and we know that those levels are elevated in the blood and in the skin. So if you sample the skin where someone has active HS, the levels are higher. So we know that there's something going on in the skin, that the immune system is releasing these cytokines and causing this inflammation. Then more recently, we've learned about IL-17, which is one that we know from psoriasis as well. And we've learned that that's elevated in the tissue and in the blood of patients with HS. And then we're learning about these other things and other pathways of the immune system. And there's kind of this interplay, we think, between bacteria as well that might be sort of stimulating some of these immune reactions, because some of these pathways are used to fight bacteria. And we know HS isn't an infection. It's not contagious. You can't spread it. But the bacteria that are in the lesions and in the tunnels probably play some role in triggering some of that inflammation.
Well, so that was one question I have always wondered, because so for those of you who've had HS, you know that sometimes you can end up with this sort of, I don't know, I would get this, like, it would leak and drain, that the I don't know, I would call it like a lesion, basically. And it was gross. I'm going to be honest. It was gross. I thought it was gross and it was extremely painful, but it felt better the more I could get the fluid to drain out, because the more that was packed in there, the more uncomfortable it would become. And I was always wondering, and even to this day, I'm like, has anybody ever looked to see what's in that fluid that's coming out of these lesions?
Some very, very smart people have done some great research on it. And it's another area where we're learning more and more. And it's really interesting because they had to even sort of develop some new techniques for detecting the bacteria, because some of our older ways to do it don't always pick up everything that could be growing, because, you know, there's all kinds of bacteria. So sometimes when we do a culture, it might inhibit the growth of things that we don't think are relevant. So there's some newer technologies to actually pick up the DNA or the RNA that's in these bacteria and detect them. And they have found that within the lesions, there are some bacteria that we don't usually see on normal skin or in normal hair follicles, because we think a lot of times these lesions sort of start out in the hair follicle, then it sort of ruptures and forms these tunnels or these pockets. They also found that in the skin that's adjacent to the HS lesions that looks normal, but it's adjacent in a patient with HS, the bacteria on top of the skin is not the same as skin that's from a totally different person who doesn't have HS. So they sort of like don't have the same bacteria on the skin or in the lesions. And we're trying to figure out what the role is there. You know, is it, it's like a chicken and the egg. Did the inflammation create an environment where the different bacteria grew, or the different bacteria start growing and that's triggering the inflammation, or is a little bit of both, a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. And then we're even learning that the gut bacteria, the microbiome of the gut, can be different in HS. And I know you know that a lot of times bacteria in the gut drive all kinds of inflammation. So then that raises this question of, well, did the bacteria in the gut then alter the bacteria in my hair follicles and on my skin, or did it trigger an immune reaction? So it's really complicated, but I'm very happy that some very smart people are trying to study it and learn more.
Yeah. So just to be very clear, it sounds like what you are saying is that the skin microbiome in the, we'll say the clear or healthy, we'll put that in air quotes, area, not where the lesions are, is different than someone who doesn't have HS. So it's not looking like this healthier, more quote unquote balanced profile that you would normally see.
Exactly. Yeah. And we call it, it's funny, we call it the non-lesional skin. So even where you don't have lesions, your skin microbiome is still different than someone who doesn't have HS, which then sort of talks to this picture of HS isn't just something in your hair follicles. It's something that affects your whole body, and things are different in your gut, in your skin, in the skin that doesn't even have HS lesions. Things are just really out of balance.
Wow. That is fast. That's like an exciting new territory to be going into to start looking at things. I mean, I know in our last interview, we discussed the anti-Saccharomyces cerevisiae antibody that is a blood test that, you know, I know that you are very familiar with. It can really look to like some of these individuals with HS have this, they're positive for this antibody. And I always find it fascinating because some of my clients with IBD are also positive for that as well. And so that was sort of like a red flag moment, like, huh, I wonder if there's a gut component. And then with the yeast, like some individuals, as we discussed, are reactive to yeast in the diet. And it makes me wonder, like, is it possible there's a yeast component? Who knows? But this is cool.
Right.
This is really, really cool to be here. So it sounds like with all of this talk about doing research, looking into actual causes of what's going on, it doesn't, though, address the pain that people who have HS right now are actually dealing with. So if you have HS, and so there's three stages, correct?
Right.
Of the disease. Is there some, like, can it change? Does the pain change depending on what stage you're in? Like, how does the stage connect to potential pain levels?
The pain levels often do sort of increase as your stage increases, because the staging system, basically stage one is you get a spot here or there. It's not really leaving scars yet. They just kind of come and go, usually a little boil or a little inflamed nodule, like a little hard pimple or big pimple. And then when you move into stage two, you start to see some scarring and some tunnels forming. And then stage three is where it basically takes over one whole section of your skin, like your whole right armpit is taken over with HS between tunnels and scars and lesions. And so even talking about the stages, you can tell it's tissue damage that's happening, that HS is actually damaging your skin and the layers under your skin and forming these tunnels and destroying things. So generally, the pain increases as you go from one stage to the next. And plus, with that scarring, it can sort of trap lesions underneath. So you get this pain where, like we mentioned earlier, you can't really see too much on the surface, but you're having a flare up under there. It's just so scarred on top. And like I said earlier, it's not to say that stage one can't be severely painful, but as a general trend, the more tissue damage you have, the more risk you have for the pain becoming more severe.
Yeah. And when people have surgery, is it typically at the more severe stages or advanced stages of the disease? And does that alleviate some of the pain? I'm not necessarily saying everyone should go out and have surgery. That's not my point. But I do want to hold space for those who are possibly in this place where they might be considering this, or this has been an option presented. How does surgery play into the pain factor?
That's a very good question. And I'm happy to say that a lot of times surgery can help alleviate some of the pain. So I don't go to the operating room, but I do surgeries in the office. I have a CO2 laser and we do a lot of surgery for tunnels, especially if we sort of have optimized everything else between your medications, your diet, everything else is doing pretty good, but you still have this painful draining tunnel or this spot that just won't go away. Then we can do some surgery on those spots. Or even if it's like a larger area, you might need surgery on the whole area. What's really interesting is, of course, whenever you're going to have a surgery, you ask like, okay, what's the pain going to be like afterward? What's my recovery going to be like? And when they ask that of HS patients undergoing surgery, the majority say the pain after surgery, even the day after, is less than the HS pain. So they say, I can get by. I've been dealing with this HS pain. Now that I've had the surgery, my pain is even less. And that's, you know, it can vary, like you said, for some people that sometimes those first few days can be kind of rough, especially changing the bandages. But most people who have surgery, when they, you know, qualify for it and it's a good option for them, once you get one, if you have more lesions, you'll want more surgery because it does provide this lasting relief and it leaves a scar. But now it's a scar that's not painful, not draining, not swelling up. It's just a normal flat scar.
And so when you have surgery, are you removing the follicle? What exactly, just briefly, you don't have to get into gory details.
Right.
What exactly is being removed?
So a lot of times with the surgery, there's a few different types. So one is called de-roofing, where we actually take one of the tunnels or one of the pockets and take the roof off and then usually scrape the lining a little bit and then just let the skin heal from the bottom up. And then there's more extensive surgery where you do sort of remove all of the skin layers. So the hair follicles go with it, any sweat glands that were there. There's sort of this misconception that doctors even often sort of still say that they shouldn't have. I'm going to remove your sweat glands and that'll make it better. And I think the confusion comes over the fact that it shows up in areas where we have sweat glands like our armpits and our groin. But we've really learned that it's more about the hair follicles. And what's really interesting is that laser hair removal can work, right? As you know very well.
Yes. And
so we think that getting rid of the hair follicles really can be helpful for some patients because then you don't have sort of that original place for the HS to start and to flare up. So in the surgeries, the hair follicles do kind of get removed with it. But like a lot of times we're targeting the tunnel or the pocket and trying to kind of open or remove that pocket so that things can kind of heal over with a normal scar.
Yeah, and I agree. And I'll actually link up into the notes my episode where I talked about my experience with a laser hair removal. It's not, I wouldn't say it's pain free, but considering, like you said, how painful a flare is, I was like, just do it. Just do it. I'll go through it. It's fine. It feels like a big rubber band being snapped on the skin. But it was so every single time I had it done, the flare-ups were progressively less angry. Mm-hmm. They lasted for a shorter period of time. And it got to a point where on rare occasion now, and I'm like that this is now like 13 years ago, I'll occasionally get what feels like a little bit of almost like a pin prick sometimes in that area. Cause that was always the first for me. I don't know if that's a universal feeling, but it would feel like I was being stabbed with a little pin. And that was how in my armpit area, that was how I knew that a flare was coming on. So Can you also share too, though, because you, before we started talking, you mentioned about a patient who they did the laser hair removal, but they, it did start after several years to come back. Like, so it's possible that you might need to revisit laser hair removal if you had it prior.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point. For some people, it's sort of a permanent solution. And it's funny because years and years ago, we used to say that laser hair removal was permanent. And now we call it semi-permanent because for some people, some of the hairs eventually do sort of recover and start growing again. So I had a patient who responded wonderfully to laser hair removal, and he was really happy because a lot of other things did not work well for him. And then he got better, didn't see him for years. It was like 6 or 7 years. And then he came back and he said, hey, I'm starting to get some hairs back and I'm starting to get a little bit of flare ups. So we did it again, another course of a few months of laser hair removal. And I had, knock on wood, I have not seen him again in a long time, but I know he'll come back if he flares up. And like with everything with HS, results may vary. Like it's one of those diseases where we need to learn more about what's going to work for one person and another. So for some people, laser hair removal works wonderfully. For other people, they don't get such a great result. But that's kind of true of all of our treatments. And I'm hoping as we learn more about the disease and what might be driving it for one person or another, we'll be able to sort of tailor things a little bit better. Right now, it's a lot of sort of trialing things and figuring out what's going to work for people. And, you know, so you got to somewhat be willing to be open to try a few different things and see what's going to work and always be optimistic that something's going to work for you, but also just remember that it might not. And then you just move on to the next option. Or if it partially works, you add something else to the regimen.
I love that. I think that's a good approach and mindset to go into this with, because I feel like many skin conditions are like that as well. There is no, as much as we would love to say this one thing will fix it all, like it doesn't exist. It's, that's not realistic. And so unfortunately, no, there is a trial and error component to it. And sometimes, as you shared, an additive piece that maybe this helps 30%. This adds on another 15%. This, and it gets you those things add together to help improve things. So for somebody who's, you know, dealing with HS, depending, I don't know if this varies by stage that you're in, what could somebody do to help relieve pain at home if, say, they're in a flare-up especially?
There are some things you can do, and a lot of this we've actually learned from our patients. So some of this has been published in the research where they'll do studies and send out a survey to patients and say, you know, like, what have you found is helpful? And the good news is there are some home remedies that can help. The number one thing that people reported to be helpful is warm compresses, where you're warming up a moist towel, or you can even, if you want it to kind of last longer, you can hard boil an egg and then wrap it in a towel and it holds heat for a while and will stay warm.
Wow.
And we sort of know that it's something you can do if you have, you know, a boil to kind of warm things up a little bit, soften things up. I mean, heat generally is kind of nice for pain. Fewer people said that ice packs were helpful, but still quite a few people said ice can help. And you can always try alternating heat and ice to see what works better. Over-the-counter pain relievers like your ibuprofen, your acetaminophen, as long as you don't have any issues with taking those, they can be helpful. And of course, a lot of people reach for those because we have them at home. You take it if you have a headache or you sprain your ankle. Some people found that Epsom salt baths could give some relief. And we don't really know why, but it's a simple thing. As long as you have access to a bathtub and it's not too hard to soak the area, or if you want to just fill the whole bathtub. And then depending where you live and what the availability is, some patients have reported really good results with CBD, which can be cream, gummies, pills, and some people even THC if marijuana is legal in your state. And I know sometimes people have, you know, strong opinions on marijuana, but we also know that opiates can be a problem. And sometimes you need it, right? Like sometimes when the pain is so severe, you need a prescription pain medication. I've had a lot of patients since things have gotten more relaxed with medical marijuana and now recreational in Michigan, who've been able to avoid opiates through using THC or CBD. And you always want to make sure you do it safely. Let your doctor know. Don't drive, you know, treat it like the substance that it is. But that's been able to give some people some relief too. And then menthol. A lot of patients have reported that creams that contain menthol, because it has sort of that cooling effect, And then there's another cream called diclofenac, which is almost like a derivative of aspirin in a cream. And so it's marketed more for like arthritis, but it can actually help the pain too. So some patients find that's helpful to kind of rub into the areas.
Have you ever, and this just came to mind as you were talking, has anyone ever mentioned to you about maybe using like topical lidocaine? Or because I know like for pain, my mom has like a pain patch for her back. Has anyone ever found anything like that helpful?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up because a lot of patients do find that the lidocaine can be really helpful. The patches are a little bit challenging with HS because it has the draining.
Good point. Yeah. Good point.
But it also comes as creams and gels, and they usually do give some pain relief. The challenge is it usually lasts a few hours, but then you can reapply it. And as long as you don't get any kind of rash or irritation from it, totally safe to use. And yeah, it's very useful. It's widely available. Like you go to any drugstore or pharmacy, you're going to be able to find some lidocaine topical.
That's good to know because, you know, like you said, pain can be pretty severe, especially when you're in a flare up. And if also, too, someone has difficulty getting back in to see their doctor or you're traveling. I mean, you never know when an HS flare up will happen. And typically it happens at the most inconvenient times.
Of course, mine happened
right before I got married. And I thought that I had breast cancer because it was this huge lump in my armpit that was painful that suddenly sprung up. And lo and behold, that was my introduction to HS. But, you know, you just don't know. And knowing some of these things can be helpful. And so you were saying this was like a survey. Is this through the HS organization? I know that you're involved with there's like a national kind of advocacy body, I believe.
Right. Yeah. There's the HS Foundation. So this survey wasn't officially by the foundation, but it was done by one of the board members who's an HS expert and studies HS and was really diving into, you know, what can we do for pain? And another one of our board members, Lauren Orenstein, who's at Emory, she is like the queen of HS pain research. She really recognized we need to get better at this. We need more research on what to do about pain. So she's done some really great work that's helped a lot. And pain is really complicated. You know, you at first glance, you think, oh, I know what pain is. But she really helped to categorize different types of pain in HS. So these are kind of like big complicated terms, but there's one called nociceptive, and that's like that aching and gnawing. And it's when your tissue's being damaged and it releases those things that sort of spark pain and send signals to your nerves. And then there's neuropathic, and the neuropathic, the neuro comes from nerves. So that's more of like a burning sensation. And that's where the nerves themselves have kind of been so messed up from having all these signals that they just start to sort of feel pain. So one of the classic neuropathic pains is diabetic neuropathy, where people have these burning feet because their diabetes has damaged their nerves. Well, sometimes in HS, these nerves get damaged. So you have this kind of burning, lingering pain that even between flares, you're like, it's still painful and it hurts. And then there's this third kind that luckily is a little bit more rare, but it's called neuroplastic. And that's where if your brain keeps getting these signals all the time for pain, it sort of adjusts in a bad way so that it starts to think a lot of things feel like pain. So gentle touch could feel like pain, or itch can start to feel like pain. And it's just sort of like the wires have gotten crossed and more stuff feels like pain than should feel like pain. And it's nice that she kind of categorized these types of pain because some treatments can be better for one type of pain than a different type of pain. Like some of the treatments we use for diabetic neuropathy, like gabapentin or duloxetine, can help with that burning neuropathic pain. Whereas sometimes other things can help with the nociceptive pain, but sometimes those ones can too. So I'm really grateful for her for leading the field so that we can sort of have more information to equip ourselves and to ask our patients, you know, can you describe your pain for me? Is it this like aching and gnawing, or is it more of a burning sensation? And that can kind of help me to then say, all right, well, maybe we're going to use this medication or try this treatment approach.
Is that something, as you're talking, is that something that perhaps a patient listening to this who has HS perhaps should pay attention to the type of pain so that they can relay that to their doctor when they see them the next time?
Absolutely. Because like I mentioned earlier, most of us just think pain is pain. And then when someone asks you to describe your pain, you can start to have those, you know, well, it is like an aching that I feel. It's a sharp pain. It's a dull pain. It's a burning sensation. And like you mentioned, if you can kind of go into the doctor and say, between my flare-ups, my pain is at, you know, a 2 out of 10, and it's a burning sensation where the tissue just feels irritated. And then when I have a flare-up, it's more of a sharp pain and it goes up to an 8. It can help your doctor to then say, all right, well, I think for your kind of burning everyday pain, we need to use one kind of medication. And then for your flare-ups, we might have to do something else. And one of the things I sort of forgot to mention at the beginning, and kind of goes without saying, but we should still say it, is that the main thing, the number one thing to reduce the pain is to try to get the disease under control. Try to get rid of that inflammation, that damaging tissue and damaging nerves. But recognizing that that might take some time and it might not be always possible, it's important for us to address the pain as well. And it's really validating for patients, for any doctors who are listening out there, ask patients about their pain. I know it makes us uncomfortable because, you know, if you ask about pain, then you've got to do something about it. But even just asking about it acknowledges and validates people's experience to say, yes, I know that you're feeling pain and I want to make it better. And a lot of patients now recognize that we're not trying to just throw opiates at everything. So they know that, you know, even if we talk about my pain and we try to get it under control, I recognize that you're not going to give me things that are too dangerous or something that I need to worry about, you know, hiding my pain because you're going to get me hooked on opiates. So it's a much better place to be talking about pain than maybe we were 10 years ago.
Yeah. And now, and I do want to touch on this as we wrap up. We have medications that are being approved. You touched on them before, like the IL-17 blockers, which you were talking about the tumor necrosis factor alpha and IL-17, I'm like, well, these are very similar to psoriasis. Isn't it so interesting, everyone, how sometimes we can have the same exact cytokines as another skin condition that's totally something else, and yet it shows up and manifests in a totally different way in somebody else's body. But how helpful do you think the biologics could be also in... like, can they reverse the disease or do they arrest it from your experience with them or what you've read? I imagine if there's tissue damage, a biologic drug's not going to fix that.
Right. Yeah, you're right. The main goal is to sort of arrest the progression, reduce that inflammation. I will say sometimes some of the areas do sort of heal a little bit once you get that inflammation under control, where, you know, some of the lesions, the medications aren't going to touch them and you're probably going to need surgery. It's scarred, it's formed a tunnel. But sometimes if it's earlier in the process for that lesion, then shutting down the inflammation sort of lets the body heal it up. But that's a big thing we try to do with all our medications, including the biologics, is sort of arrest the process. And then we can deal with, you know, the damage that's been done and does it need surgery. And the biologics can work really well. So like we mentioned earlier with HS, it's a little variable in terms of how well something's going to work for you as an individual. But for some people, they get an amazing response to either adalimumab, secukinumab, blocking IL-17 or TNF. And they do really well and they're very happy. For other people, it works kind of in the middle. And it's like you were talking about earlier, then we might add some things on. So it might be part of a regimen where it got you 50% better. Now let's add some other things on to get you the rest of the way. And we're very lucky in that the treatments we have for HS, by and large, most of them can be combined. They don't interact with each other. They don't cause extra side effects when you combine them. So that's one of the blessings, is it is easy to kind of build a regimen. And then some people don't respond so well to one biologic, which is why I'm so grateful that we're getting more coming to the market. There's a lot being studied and they're targeting all kinds of different areas of HS. There's even one being studied right now that targets something called IL-31. And instead of looking at the inflammatory lesions, the red painful spots, they're actually looking at reducing the number of draining tunnels. And so it kind of blocks a different part of the immune system that's probably involved with those tunnels draining. So it's kind of interesting to even see new targets coming out and new things that I think will just keep adding to our arsenal to kind of combat this HS. And And for the HS patients out there, there are going to be some drugs that their first indication is going to be HS. Because I know it's great to find out a psoriasis medication can work for you too, but it's going to feel really good when there's something that was designed just for your disease. I mean, I'm not knocking the ones that are from psoriasis and work for HS because it's still great when they work, but it's really a good feeling to go, hey, this was made for my disease.
Yeah. And I think the other piece too is always to remember that, and this is something that I think people get overwhelmed with, sometimes you need meds. It's okay. I don't think that there should be all this judgment. Like, there's a lot of judgment online at what people do. I think it's always important. I always try to remind my clients and anyone that I speak to that it's your body. No one knows the level of suffering and pain that you are experiencing on a daily basis, be it physical or mental or emotional, from your condition. Sometimes it's all three. And whatever you need to do to get back to a better quality of life can really drastically impact so many other areas of your daily life. And you can do the diet stuff. You can do some of the supplements. You can do gut work. You can do other things at the same time. You don't have to feel like it's one or the other camp. Like you shared, many of these things can be done in conjunction with one another, and they don't actually work against one another, which is actually really nice. So yes. I just always like to remind people that really there's a lot more options. It's not just one thing, because I don't like feeling stuck. I like knowing I have options.
Yes. Get the best of both worlds. Don't knock one world and block it out. Get the best of both, you know, get everything that's available to you as an option and consider them all. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's the best when you can sort of integrate dietary things, lifestyle things, supplements, and the medications, and find what's best for you. Find what works for you and brings you back into balance and makes you feel good and helps you.
Yeah. And you take patients, right, Dr. Dave Louis?
I do, yes.
This is like I know you see other conditions, but this is like really your main area of focus, correct, HS?
It is. Yeah. I've spent a lot of time and energy on HS, and I'm like you said, I'm so glad it's getting more attention and more awareness, because awareness is a big problem. We're kind of spoiled here in Detroit, because I have my HS center and there's another one down the road at Henry Ford. I'm at Wayne State University. So it's a good place to be if you have HS, because you've got some great doctors who are dedicated to it here in Detroit. And we're trying to, through the HS Foundation, get doctors across the country, because we want everybody to have an HS expert nearby.
Yeah, I think that would be absolutely wonderful, because I would also love to not be the person going, that sounds like HS. Did you ask your doctor if that's HS? Because like, as you shared in our previous episode, it is, for some reason, it is the thing that most doctors, not all, but a lot, do not think of HS. And once you know it,
it's not a hard diagnosis. Tells you, I've got boils in my armpit and my groin, you go, you've got HS. I'll look and I'll confirm. But yeah, it's not hard. So it's just that awareness and sort of making people aware that it exists, you know. So we're trying to reach people in medical school. We're trying to reach people out in practice and say, hey, keep it on your radar. If you're not seeing HS, HS is probably seeing you.
That is probably true. Well, I just want to thank you so much for being here again. I always love when you swing by and share your wisdom about HS with everyone. And I look forward to having you back again sometime.
Thanks so much for having me. I look forward to it too.
One of the things that I deeply appreciate, especially having gone through so many different physical issues in my life, is that pain is no joke. And it is something that can truly wreck your entire life and your quality of life, which is why this conversation initially was all about pain and pain management for HS. But I love the fact that Dr. Dave Louis was able to bring to the conversation so much of this newer research to help you better understand what's happening. And I promise I will continue to share more on HS as I discover it, because this is one area that I truly believe we need better answers for. So if this episode was helpful, or if you have questions or comments, you can head on over to check out the full transcript and all of the links that we've shared for you at skintorupt.com/338. And there we can keep the conversation going. And I imagine you're here because you're trying to figure out what the heck is driving your rashes. And so I've got a great gift for you. You can head on over to stopmyrashesnow.com and download the new Stop My Rashes Quick Start Guide to help you start figuring this out. It is the fastest way to get answers and action steps with a root cause approach tailored to your specific skin diagnosis. Then rate and review the Healthy Skin Show and hit that subscribe button so you never miss out on our weekly episodes. And let's connect online. I'm at Jennifer Fugo. Thanks for joining me, and I look forward to digging deeper with you in the next episode.